anybody who's joining has now joined or will join. So good morning, everyone. This is Sarah Barzee, Interim Chief Talent Officer at the Department of Ed, and I'm here with Georgette Nemmer and Nancy Pugliese from the Bureau of Educator Preparation, Standards and Certification. And we are going to ask, even though there's no wonderful way to do this, we would like to know who's on the call. So we are going to ask that people just jump in. Probably the easiest way is by alphabetical order of your last name. Because otherwise it's going to be a free-for-all. So,
Tony Bavona from Brookfield.
Hi, Tony.
Good morning.
I know somebody else is on besides Tony Bavona.
Well, I'm the end of the alphabet, but I'm Danny Thibodeau.
Hi, Danny. Good morning.
It's Elsa Nunez from Willimantic.
Good morning, Elsa.
I forgot where I was for the moment.
It's Carissa from CAF.
Good morning, Carissa.
Good morning.
I'm sorry, the last one we lost, was it?
Jack Miller from New Britain.
Good morning.
Gary Maynard from Connecticut Federation.
Hi, Gary.
Good morning.
Larry Schaefer, CAPS.
Good morning, Larry. I heard Sal, and then did I hear Jess?
Yes.
Good morning, Jess.
Hi, good morning.
Tom. Sandy Grande, Connecticut College.
Good morning, Sandy.
Tom DeFranco from UConn.
Morning.
Fran Rabinowitz from Hamden.
Good morning, Fran.
Thanks.
Mary Pollock, New Canaan.
Morning, Mary.
Larry Jacobson, Department of Ed.
Morning, Larry.
Monica Philbu from Teach for America.
Hi, Monica.
Carol Clifford, AFT, Connecticut.
Hi, Carol. Hey, last call. Anybody who has not yet introduced themselves?
And Sarah, you know that I'm on it, Stephen Pryor.
Well, good morning, Commissioner. I did know, but nice to know you're there. Thank you. Well, that was less painless than I anticipated. So thank you all. Just as we get started, thank you for being here. I know the summer is a busy time and hard to convene everyone, but we are delighted that so many people were able to join us in the call this morning. We have not officially been together as an EPAC Council since last April when we completed what I think was a good deal of work, while not perhaps what our initial goal was. Between January and April 15th, when we brought it to the State Board for the 6 Principles for Teacher Preparation, I think we did accomplish a great deal. At that time, in April, we knew that leader preparation was also a goal that we wished we had accomplished last year, and in the interest of time, we did agree by consensus that it made sense to get the teacher principals to the board and then take next steps. Since then, over the summer, we've had the opportunity internally to talk about next steps to continue with our momentum moving forward. April was a time when we brought it to the board when we recognized that the institutions of higher ed would soon be out of formal session in May and schools following right behind. So it was a deliberate decision on our part just because of the timing to take a small hiatus, if you will, and then get back on with in earnest when we reconvene in the fall. So in our conversations, we were talking about next steps and how to move forward, particularly in light of the fact that we wanted to address leader preparation. So internally, we talked about the fact that we felt that there was a level of alignment between the 6 principles that we reached consensus on with respect to teacher preparation, and as we looked at them, we felt that there may be a high degree of alignment between those same 6 principles and their application to leader preparation. So with that, we then decided that this call would be a way for us to determine from our stakeholders whether there was consensus in the group that an agreement with us that those six principles would also apply to leader preparation, if not exactly as written and designed, perhaps with minor modifications. So our purpose for today, both for the webinar and for the outcome of this meeting, is to hear the feedback. We certainly appreciate the time that you took and the thoughtful comments and feedback we've already received. Our rate of return for the survey was excellent, so we thank you for that. And so our purpose today is to stay at that high level, at the principal level, and again, an outcome of this meeting is to determine whether the six principles for teacher preparation also apply to the leader as is or with slight variations. I do want to take a moment to address the non-purpose so that we can stay both on time and on goal to the meeting. We recognize, and again, the comments were extremely thoughtful and helped us a great deal. Our goal today is not to, for lack of a better term, go into the weeds. And we know that from our meetings that sometimes we go into that more granular level, and that's not our goal today. Our goal today is to, again, stay at the high-level principles, and Derek and Georgette and myself and others will help to keep us there if we are going more granular. If we are able to arrive at the point where we feel the principles work for leader preparation, it would be our goal to take those forward to the State Board, and then to the next step would be to go to that granular level to flesh further out the examples, those areas where we think more research and study is needed, and so on. So with that, I just ask if there are any questions with the purpose as well as the non-purposes of the meeting today. Okay, hearing none, I am then going to turn it over to Barrick Abramson. You'll remember that Barrick was with us for the last, if not one, perhaps two meetings when we convened in person. Barrick is actually going to walk us through the webinar today, so I'll turn it over to Barrick.
Thank you, Sarah, and I just want to, again, thank all of the members for joining this call and conference and for participating in the survey. As we get ready to talk about the survey, we did receive 23 responses and thorough comments to most of the different principles, so thank you everybody for submitting those. And those have been submitted, and if they have not already been, will be circulated to everybody. Today what we're going to do is walk through the more substantive points raised in the comments that were received during the survey. And as Sarah mentioned, we really want to spend today focused on the high-level principles. There were a number of comments and suggestions submitted that relate to specifics that may be, as we talked about in the teacher prep framework, items to consider for next steps. And just want to assure everybody that all of the comments have been recorded. And at the end of this, we'll talk about the next steps. But those things have been recorded and aggregated so that as we go into that phase, they're all there. Today, as Sarah mentioned, we really want to focus on the high-level principles. Mm-hmm. So with that, just want to bring us back to the three guiding beliefs that the council and the commissioner established to guide some of our work on the teacher preparation, kind of ground our thinking in today's discussion about these. We do have six principles to go through today. Our goal is to spend about 15 minutes on each topic. There may be a little difference in some of those. Just as an introduction, these are the six principles that we're talking about, taken directly from the teacher preparation framework that EPAC developed. And as I mentioned, there may be some that we spend a little bit more time versus others, so we wanted to put this up first. Looking at the different responses to these six standards, you can see on number one, there was a fair amount of disagreement or different input there, so I think we may end up spending a little bit more time there versus something like principle number four, where there was broad-based consensus that we were on the right track. And that's not to say that everybody thought we had it exactly right. I think there's certainly some clarification and some questions people had. But just wanted to put this up front so people have an idea of where the group thinking is going into this discussion. So before we jump into the first one, Sarah or Georgette or Commissioner, is there anything you'd like to add to today's discussion to preface it?
I'm all set. Barrick, Commissioner, I don't know if you'd like to jump in here or just jump in as we...
Jump as we go. Thank you for offering.
Okay, perfect. I just want to remind people also that during the conversation, if you have a question but don't want to interrupt the flow or it's not the time, there is the window, as Barrick mentioned, some of you joined later, there is a chat window that is up on your screen. So just wanted to make sure you were aware of that. So go ahead, Barrick.
Great. So what we're going to do, just to try to keep the conversation moving through all six and allow us to have the discussion about the guiding belief, is we're going to put up on the screen, which everybody should be able to see, what was the principle developed for teacher preparation and what was a draft of how we would translate that to school leader or administrator preparation. We'll put both of those up, not going to spend a lot of time just rereading those because I know everybody's seen them. And then on the following slide for each principle, CSDE has put together some responses to some of the more substantive questions raised about the principle itself. If you submitted a comment and you don't see it on there, a lot of the comments, as we mentioned, were put in the parking lot because they related to specifics that may be items for consideration or review in the next phase of our work. If you feel like you submitted a comment that is related to the principle, as Sarah mentioned, please feel free to speak up on the call or to enter it into the chat window, and we'll address that. So, talking about the overall response, as you'll see, the wording suggestions were very helpful. And the next iteration that we'll work on after today's call will reflect those suggestions and improved and clarified wording of some of the principles. The questions and suggestions about the specific examples will be posted in the parking lot, and we'll be addressing those in the next phase. And there were some contrasting views on some of the different principles. But ultimately, the principle is going to represent a balance between raising and regulating state standards versus the autonomy of preparation. And the intent of the principle is they apply to all school leader programs and candidates, which was a comment or a question raised on a number of the principles. So going into the first standard, which is program entry standards, and as I mentioned, this is the one where there was the most feedback, both on the principle and on the specifics. So Sarah and Georgette and Nancy have put together some comments and responses to some of the more substantive ones. But knowing that there was a lot of discussion about this during the survey, we want to spend a good amount of time talking through some of these. And I'll let Sarah and Georgette talk to this. But there was definitely a feeling that we needed to clarify that the knowledge, skills, and disposition for school leaders refer to those outlined in the Connecticut School Leader Standards. I think it was a very astute point that was raised by several people, is that alignment. And that the standard, we need to scaffold those standards required for entry versus those that are developed during the program and what's measured and expected at exit. The next point I'd like to ask Sarah or Georgette to speak to, which is the expectations of the demonstration of skills and some discussion of whether these are precursors or should be requirements for entry versus these being things that are measured at different points in the program or at exit, which was some different input and comments that were received during the survey.
So, Barrick, I'm going to ask Georgette to do that for us. Well, we appreciated the suggestions here, and, you know, one of the questions we want to pose back to the group and for all of us really to think very deeply about is whether we want to add this language, and this is a consolidation of multiple comments, so this isn't just one person who suggested these, so many people suggested these various bullet points be added as program entry standards. So our concern and question to all of you is it reasonable and appropriate to expect a certain level of demonstration of these skills prior to entry or at entry of the program, or does it belong elsewhere related to assessment of competency during the program, which comes under Principle 5? So we don't want to preclude people who say who have been predominantly teachers in the classroom but want to be teacher leaders and entering these school leader programs
if they haven't had, say, specific experience, for example, collaborating with others beyond their department, or mentoring and coaching others, for example, or some who may not have, although it's hard to believe that some teachers would not have been involved in monitoring or supporting continuous improvement, but it's possible. So I think that we'd like to open that up to the group to comment on. And then the other two bullets at the bottom that we've, you know, highlighted here out of the feedback received on the survey that, you know, I think are of interest and certainly important to note. The second to the last bullet, how do we ensure that candidates are committed to being school leaders? We know from our background and the data that we've seen over time, and many of you who have school leader programs know that many of our candidates do enter the 092 school leader program and never do serve in that role or even in roles such as department chair and so forth. So that is a point that we'd like to hear a little more from you about, as well as the last bullet here around prerequisite degree in education and experience. And to what extent, and you know, what is the baseline on that for program entry? So, I'm going to turn that back to the group.
This is Mary Kolick, and if I could jump in just for a second, I think the questions that you raise are related. So, my dissertation was on the shortage of principals in Connecticut, and one of the key findings was the fact that and I interviewed a number of people with the 092. That didn't go on, and one of the key findings was the lack of socialization for those people around leadership in their role. And so I think that if we don't have entry standards that define the expectation for leadership within the teacher role, that we do people a disservice. And so I would advocate that we look or we consider that in those entry standards, not as exit outcomes, we do define an expectation that people engage in behaviors that are related to leadership in their role as teachers, because I think it communicates an expectation to districts about what kinds of experiences they should be providing, and or to candidates about what kind of experiences they should be seeking out or creating, even if they're not existent in an explicit or obvious way, because I think in the long run that will strengthen all practices, both at the school level, the candidates, and certainly the program.
Tony Bavona from Brookfield. You know, I tend to agree with Mary's comments. I know that, you know, many districts have administrative aspirant programs. And, you know, the tasks for those particular programs were, and experiences are important relative to, you know, school leaders. So things like that, it would be great to see in somebody's resume or application who are applying to, you know, such a program.
This is Danny Thibodeau. I will tell you, when I filled out the survey, I thought about this in terms of how do these standards align with the current administrator evaluation trainings that we've all either have gone through or are going through. And I do agree these are very important skill sets or experiences. My concern would be, depending on the district in which an aspirant educational leader works, they might not have been given an opportunity to demonstrate some of the skills listed. For example, collaboration with stakeholders. I could see where there would be opportunities for shared leadership, inspiring others, or being able to work well with other teachers. I think these are very solid. I think they're important. I'm not sure that I would give such specificity to be a precursor for entry into a program. And just quickly, another comment, the second to the last bullet. I know I look at this and I think, you know, it's very hard to get into the minds of people. It is easy for someone to say, oh, yes, they want to be a district leader, but actually have another motivator that is much more important to them. So I'm not sure that that is something that we could actually even support, that we would, how can we really validate this when a person wants to enroll in an O92 program? So those are my two.
This is Carissa from CAST. Going back to what Mary said initially about looking for these added expectations, and I appreciate that. I think that that's a very realistic expectation. And then to connect to what Danny just shared about opportunities in districts, I'm wondering if we want to articulate that what we're looking for is a preponderance of a demonstration of some of these precursors, to allow for folks who maybe haven't had sort of equal access to some of these developing skills. I do think, though, that we should look for some of these actions and practices. I think a lot of them align very well with what we expect of teachers now as they develop as teacher leaders. So I think we could easily identify those teachers that are a little more excellent in terms of their demonstration. I also agree with Danny about looking that candidates would be committed, and I'm not sure, you know, to Danny's point, that we can really quantify that and use that as a leverage. I think in looking at some of the skills, we might be able to, I guess, pull out of the demonstration of the skills the candidate's intent, maybe in a softer way. So those are my thoughts. And I apologize for the hammering on that home, and there's some people putting siding on the house.
This is Fran from Hamden, and I just want to build on what and Mary and Danny have said, as well as Tony. I just want you to know I'm listening. That's all. That's why I'm naming them. But frankly, I think these are essential prerequisites, and I think I see us as having an obligation to also, just as we talked about in the teacher prep, to be a sort of a advocate for the district and pre-service coming together on this. And I think we have to send a message to districts that, in fact, these are important skills. And so if you're not allowing the opportunity for it, you probably need to take a look at your practice in the district. I also feel that, you know, I've done a great deal of work with Richard Elmore, and one of the things that I think are really important to note is that I can teach people content. I can, if you don't know UBD curriculum, I can teach you that. I'm not sure that I can teach you the dispositions to be collaborative or to share if you don't have that disposition. So I very much want to see that and have some evidence of it. And I'm just thinking of my own experience with hiring teachers. I will tend to hire teachers who have had some type of internship where they're displaying the dispositions and the content knowledge that I need. And the more evidence I have, more certain I am of that they will be successful in wherever I'm placing them.
This is Sal Menzo from Wallingford. Fran, I think you just hit the nail on the head. I think you could teach people skills, but you can't always teach them the attributes necessary to be a successful leader. And I think that's the challenge, I think, as district leaders, as program coordinators at university college levels. I think that's one of the things that we have people going through programs, both in education as teachers and as leaders, that don't have the it factor or the X factor, so to speak. And I think it's hard to see or hard to get there. But I also agree with what has been said, especially by Fran, that districts need to step up and provide their teachers this opportunity. But I do think there needs to be some expectations at the outset of the process so people understand what they're getting into. It's not just about a pay raise. It's not just about moving over a column on the salary schedule. It's about actually a call to practice, a call to applying what they've learned. And I think that's the challenge. So I'm enjoying hearing everything. As Fran said, I'm definitely listening, as she is too, and I do appreciate the conversation. But I think it is something that we do need to have a more, I don't know if it's more thorough or if it's just a process to weed, and I say that in quotes and in all kindness, but to at least get people that are moving through the program that do see themselves as future school leaders.
It would be hard. I mean, I'm trying to think about a fact when people that are applying to a program, if the conditions don't exist and you have those dispositions, you've created the conditions. You know, leaders don't wait for conditions, they create conditions. So even if you're in a position where it's not obvious or evident or encouraged, I think people provide evidence, and, you know, the responsibility is that we should define what it should look like, and we should look deeply for it, so it has to be creative. But if you keep those standards explicit, it's going to communicate and encourage both the candidates, and then it's going to encourage the districts too. But I would be hard-pressed to think that somebody who is going to fare well in one of these programs that are robust would not be able to find something in their practice that would be able to, you know, allow us to see them at least trying to affect some of these standards.
I agree.
Thank you, everybody, for the thoughts on this. If we could, I'd like to just go back to the principle itself as drafted and try to, because I think a lot of points are being brought up. They're going to require some deep dive conversations, some additional research on what exactly these front-end screens look like for commitment to the profession and these dispositions. If we could, based on these conversations and the comments, look back at this example principle and focus some discussion on, do we have this right? Are we reflecting in the second paragraph the principle that they must have the knowledge, skills, disposition that are indicative of what we expect? Understanding that how we define exactly what those are will be the next phase of the work. But what I'm hearing in this conversation and what I read in a lot of the comments was discussion about, what are these skills? Do we want to require some of these things? And there were some questions raised about the wording of that they must recruit only exemplary teachers who have demonstrated the competency. So looking at this principle and considering the conversation we've just had, what are people's thoughts about how this guiding principle is worded at present?
I could start off with that. This is Jess House at Western. I think that the notion of you can only admit exemplary teachers is probably close the door on lots of people who would become very fine school administrators. So that's objectionable. We do have to pay attention to those qualities, dispositions, some base level knowledge around what teachers have done from their role in their classroom and working with other teachers. And, you know, I think all the comments that came before addressed that pretty well. But that's our target for a candidate into a program, not to, you know, find the exemplary teachers. That's actually a different set of knowledge and skills, but we can expect certain competencies and dispositions in teachers in the base for recruiting these candidates.
This is Kathy Butler from the University of St. Joseph. The one statement that I think belongs in this opening piece is something about ethical considerations. It seems that to not have a proclivity toward an ethical stance puts a leader at a disadvantage from the very get-go. So I would just ask us to think whether that's an appropriate phrase to have at this stage.
I'd like to thank everyone for their comments or additional comments on this. I think a couple of pieces that we just need to go back to, and that is that we will probably go back to the example administrator principle and specifically cite the Connecticut School Leader Standards as the knowledge, skills, and dispositions to which candidates will be held, but also some of the precursor expectations that you've all been discussing. We'll look at those and see how they are or are not necessarily articulated. I believe most of them are articulated in the school leader standards, including the one you just named, Kathy, around ethics. So the question becomes, how specific do we get in the principal level versus, parsing it out more when we get into the development of the specific criteria or measures that we're going to expect or actions taken by the institution at entry for admission into these programs and so forth. So I think that, you've all shared some very thoughtful comments about what we need to expect before we admit the candidates into the program. So at this point, we're going to need to go back and rework this into the principal language. But we do hear all of your comments and appreciate them.
I just have one more comment, if I could. This is Fran. Maybe because I'm so into the teacher eval right now, using it and implementing. My question is, when we say exemplary, obviously I'm not looking to lower standards, but, I've been very clear to my teachers, we remove proficient as a label and put in accomplished. And we said to them, exemplary is, major. You don't live there necessarily. You may be exemplary in some of the domains. Certainly, we expect that you will be accomplished. And so I guess I'm taking exemplary very literally from the teacher evaluation plan. And in fact, I don't think we expect more than 5%. That's, if you look at our rubric, it's a very tough place to be all the time. And it's okay with me if we're just going to consider that 5%. But I just want us to be aware that my whole thinking around exemplary has certainly changed over this year as compared to how I used exemplary in the past.
Fran, this is Sarah, and offline I said exactly that. We have got to weave this together with our educator evaluation and support system, and we have definitely messaged, and I could not say it any better than you just did, so I won't do it. It's exactly as you just stated it, that we have made exemplary truly mean something. So to both yours and Jess's point, we'll change that word because, like proficient, we have created a meaning around exemplary now. So I think what we all definitely mean is we really need high quality, however we're going to define the essence of that. But the word exemplary, again, whether it's Danielson or us messaging on Danielson's behalf, we are definitely messaging you don't live in exemplary.
Right.
So we point extremely well taken and we'll address it.
Sarah, it's Elsa from Eastern Connecticut State. I just wanted to say that I think Fran's point, too, there's a nuance there, that which is that connect these principles to the evaluation, the words in the principles to the evaluation, the words in the evaluation is really important, something we should be ticking and tying
throughout the conversation. That's right. That's what I'm saying, is we have to be really careful that we stitch this seamlessly with our new educator evaluation and support system. And over the last year, Fran and many others have truly exemplary means something now in a way with associated with our educator evaluation and support system. So absolutely on both points.
Sarah, just one other point. Could we not attribute it to the person as an exemplary teacher, but to the practice? And that's, I know, wordsmithing, but I'm very, this is Mary. You know my...
I do. Yep. Good point, Mary. Thank you. Yep.
Thank you, everybody. And just in the interest of time, we're going to advance to the next principal. I know CSD will take all of these comments in, and we'll be working on some rewording and rewriting of this that will get shared back out. And if you have additional thoughts on the principle itself and the wording, please do feel free to share those either in the chat or by email as these work to get redrafted. But I do want to move on to the next principle, and I appreciate that the first one there was a good amount of input on. The second one having to do with staffing and support of clinical experiences. And clearly this one was a bit longer than the educator preparation principle that the group developed and the state board adopted. But wanted to go into the discussion of this really was more wordsmithing than anything else and some clarification around that third sentence. And I'm going to ask Georgette to speak to this example that's provided here.
Most of the comments that we received on principle to the example school leader or principal language was, as Barrick just said, mostly wording, terminology, wordsmithing, if you will. So I thought the most concerning comment we received from several people had to do with confusion over the intent of that third sentence in terms of the candidate evaluating the quality of the faculty or school-based mentor that the person has to guide them through the field experiences and of the internship. That is a very critical piece. We did obviously add that new to this school leader principle. It wasn't necessarily in the teacher principle. So there are two levels here that I guess I want to put back to the group as a question. First, to clarify, we did in fact intend and reference that the candidate evaluate to some extent the quality of the staffing and support, as the principal refers to, of the clinical experience. This tells us whether they are receiving, through whatever instrument or means that we use, receiving the type of support and guidance, leadership from others to help them develop those essential school leader skills that you've all identified and that we just talked about in Principle 1. So that is really the essence of that third sentence, is that we would like to propose here in this principle that the candidate does evaluate the prep program faculty member who is supervising, as well as the school-based mentor who is guiding at the school level or district level.
If I could comment on that, this is Jess from Western. It seems that that is in the weeds. In other words, here we are talking about principles for the development of a school leader, and we're getting to a detail that is not directly focused on our topic. So I don't think it really belongs here at all. It's something that we would get to when we think about implementation and thinking about how to make the program work better. There may be a place for that, but I don't think it should be in this discussion.
Jeff, if I could ask, would your suggestion be that getting into that the candidate would evaluate and offer that feedback should not be in the principle, or getting into the details of how or that there would be an instrument created? Would you be comfortable seeing something that said that the programs will receive, so to speak, 360 feedback from all involved, or do you not think that feedback should be included in the principle? I just want to look at the principle wording and make sure I'm understanding what you think does or doesn't belong in there.
Okay, I don't think it belongs in this discussion. In other words, I don't think it's part of a principle or an example of the principle for preparation of school leaders. Here we should be looking at the experience that the candidate has as they progress through a program, and how that clinical experience plays, you know, a very important role in that.
And hello.
Give them that experience.
How are you?
Is something in terms of the candidate's evaluation of that experience has a place in the implementation of the program.
Webinar on administrator preparation.
If I could ask folks that aren't speaking to go on mute or move their phones.
Yes.
Just one last question, and then back to group input. Do you think that that's something that we should set off to the side and revisit as part of the discussion on program accountability?
This is Danny Thibodeau. I appreciate what Jess has said. I think it's critical to get feedback from the participants in a program. We need something in this standard. I would suggest maybe we would reword it, because this is the statement as written is a very, very strong, powerful statement. We do need feedback from participants, whatever method is used to gather that feedback, because we're into continuous improvement for the experiences that prospective leaders might would have, and how can we get a comprehensive feedback if we don't include feedback from the candidate?
This is Georgette. I just want to clarify a little more here that this principle is really about the quality of staffing and support. In the next principle, Principle 3, we will address, and you've already read, obviously, that the focus of Principle 3 is about the quality of the clinical experience, sequence, variety, etc. This Principle 2 is really about the who. Who is providing the support, the faculty, the school-based mentorship? That's what this is about, and how we determine and give the candidate the opportunity to, as Danny just mentioned, provide feedback about the quality of the support piece. So we could leave it here, or we could move it to programmatic assessments, but the programmatic assessments under Standard 5 or Principle 5 really speak to the candidate competency. This principle is really about the quality of the support and staffing that the institution is providing. So
okay.
Faculty evaluation, if you will, but that's what really is addressed here.
This is Larry. I guess I don't think the third one belongs here. I think the phrase in the first paragraph, provide effective clinical experience, it's what that third one is doing is really measuring that.
You are.
That's not a principle, it's a how-to. Yeah, this is Tony again. I agree with Larry and Jess's comments regarding that. I think that the first two paragraphs talk about the quality of the and the significance of the impact of the quality of that level of supervision. Where this, the third paragraph, and I agree with Danny, I mean, there needs to be feedback from a candidate, absolutely. But to me, that's placed in more of the assessment and the quality of a program or experience.
I think we've got some clarity on the opinions on this, and if it's okay with everybody, I'd like to propose that this input be taken by CSDE as they work on some next versions of these and consider what level of specificity should be here and where this measurement of that quality in as a means of improving the quality to be included in the principles.
Yes, that works, Eric. This is Sarah. That.
Great. So that said, let's move to the next principle, which is the clinical experience requirements. And as I think both Georgette and Sarah alluded to, two different principles. One relates to the experience of the candidate. One relates to the staffing of it. So we'll look at the comments and feedback summary from this, and then again try to walk through the principle itself, understanding that there's a lot of discussion around clinical experience, what it should look like, what some of the specifics should be. A lot of that is going to be in the next phase of our work, so we want to stick to just the principle here. And there was some discussion, in fact quite a few comments, about what that variety of clinical experiences should be, and a few questions, should it get very specific to include things like urban districts or diverse populations. And there was a question about the use of the term qualified educators in the first sentence. So wanted to provide some clarity back from CSDE here.
Right.
There was also a request to clarify the second paragraph. And similar to Principle 2, what is intended there was that the candidates evaluate the quality of their experience in order to develop the requisite skills upon which they will be assessed. So I'd like to ask Georgette if there's anything you'd like to add, or Sarah, and then move back to looking at the principle itself to talk through that, understanding that some specifics will be developed in the next phase.
Yes, just to support what Barrick has introduced in that those three comment bullets. So the first one, the question we put back to the group is, do we need to be that specific about the variety? We already addressed variety in the principle itself. So some suggestions were to specifically, or I should say explicitly, expect urban or diverse population placement of these school leader candidates. So we'd like to hear from the group about that. And then the other two bullets, I think, are pretty clear in terms of our, the summary here. The qualified educator reference in the principle, guess what? It refers back to Principle 2 in terms of who is not only providing supervision from the institution, but who are the school-based mentors? Are they qualified to be doing? So it's a reference back to Principle 2. And the third bullet, in terms of candidates evaluating the quality of the coherence, we just talked about that again in terms of Principle 2. This is the expectation that the candidates do have a feedback loop to comment on the quality of the clinical experiences and leading them to feel they have the opportunity to learn and demonstrate the school leader standards and the knowledge, skills, and dispositions needed to serve in a school leadership role.
So with that being the framing of this, if we could look back at the principle and open it up to a discussion, does this principle accurately reflect the beliefs of EPAC? Did we do a good job translating from the educator prep? Is there anybody that has suggestions around the wording or any concerns on this principle in light of the previous discussion we had and the clarification that Georgette just offered?
I guess I will. This is Jess. I would still make a comment that I think that quality improvement is a really important principle in anything that we do in preparing educators. I don't know if it needs to be embedded in any of the principles or whether it should be a separate principle that speaks, more directly about the value of that. Here to take each principle and identify places where that must be done, it's kind of detracts from the principle itself. Because this is about clinical experience, the meaning of that, the first paragraph. The principle itself, I think, is well written, but we must evaluate being an example of that. I don't think so. It's important, and it should be in the principles, but it should be that's a principle that should be applied in every dimension of the program. So I guess I have to ask the people who authored that, perhaps, to explain why this particular aspect of the program was selected for the application of the principle of quality improvement, feedback, and so forth.
So, Jess, this is Sarah. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying you definitely understand the desire to measure, if you will, quality improvement and continuous feedback that informs both, quality program improvement. You're just suggesting that perhaps it's more overarching. I don't know. I'm not suggesting it's another principle, but you're suggesting that there is a place for it just may not be, and then you're questioning why it's in this particular clinical experience work. So if we were to not lose the essence, meaning that we feel stakeholder feedback, again, just like our educator evaluation system, stakeholder feedback is important, it may be more appropriate in another principle, i.e. principle 6, or maybe just reconsidered where it fits. Is that fair for us to take a look at again?
Absolutely.
Okay. Will do.
This is Kathy, and I would support what Jess is saying and suggest that both of these statements from 2 and 3 might be embedded in basic expectations of a program's assessment system rather than as a principal. So I think you're on the right track.
Okay, so either in 5, and that makes sense, Kathy. So we'll note both of those, and we'll rework that, or relook it and rework it, and the next version will reflect something along those lines.
Great.
So with that said, we're going to move on to principle number 4, having to do with the district program partnerships. I'll just take a quick look at the principle. And there was some questions in the feedback about the alternating use of the term collaborative partnerships versus strategic partnerships. Mm-hmm. And a question was raised whether both statements are needed. And I wanted to let Georgette address this, referring to the collaborative partnership to ensure the quality, and the second one about the shared responsibility, which in different forms was a message that was heard quite a bit in the survey response. Georgette, do you want to speak to that?
Well, this one is really a copy of what we did around the teacher principle, and interestingly, you know, some of you picked up on the fact that we used those terms and questioned whether we really needed both statements. So we feel that they both have value in the principle, and other than that, if you feel strongly as a group that we need to consolidate, then we can do that, but it would mean that we'd have to go back to the teacher principal as well.
Kathy, again, what are the specific distinctions that you see between collaborative and strategic?
This was really the will of the group in terms of crafting the principle. It's the teacher principle, and so the reference, as I read it, is that the first one, as I noted in the summary of the feedback, refers to the collaborative partnership and the need for that around ensuring quality. The second one about strategic is really about the district sharing responsibility and making development decisions with the institution around the implementation of the clinical experiences. So, I think you, again, go back to the principle and read the original teacher principle and compare to that what we did in the example administrator principle. So I'd like to hear from the group. I was basically just facilitating the comments and feedback we got. Not a lot of concern here, but those were the few substantive comments we got on this one.
This is Mary, and I just wonder if this is an example of when you work together for so long, you know, nuanced language becomes important to the group, but when you step back and read it, I don't know if the naive reader would really understand the difference between those two without a glossary. So I don't know if we want to go back in and look at it, but I just think it's a matter of...
This is Alan Taylor. I guess I am a perfect example of the naive reader, and I confess I had a completely different understanding. Collaborative, to me, talks about how the partnership is conducted, and strategic means simply that someone, presumably both sides, but in this case we're focusing on the teacher prep programs, has a reason for going into this particular partnership. So I'm missing completely the distinction that George just explaining.
Thank you, Alan. I think we're actually saying the same thing. The collaborative piece is the working together in the first part to ensure the quality, and then the strategic is the how the partnership actually makes things happen to ensure accountability on both sides and develop the sequence and coherence of the experiences. So, you know, again, this is really a matter of how we wish to articulate these expectations, but these were the words that came out of the original EPAC principle for the teacher prep reform on district program partnerships, and we basically just copied that into the school leader principle. So, I refer back to the will of the group, so I'd love to hear more if anyone else has any comments.
I have a comment, Elsa. That these words on the linguistic matter of whether there's redundancy, there is none between collaborative and strategic. They're two different things. And they can be different. I don't want to take up time, but I don't see them as overlapping.
And I think if Alan's read on them is what we intended, then they're fine.
I was wondering if you said we'll develop partnerships that act strategically to support clinical and school-based training.
I think that's a great suggestion. If I could offer the suggestion to the group that it sounds like the intent of these everybody does agree with, and I think there is definitely a benefit to not differing too much from the wording that we presented to the state board on the educator principle. So if I could suggest that CSDE take this input that there may be some need to clarify, but keeping, as Elsa pointed out, what are two different terms that define two different things, and see if we can't keep that wording, but move some words around it to clarify it a little bit so that naive reader is a little more clear while we keep the same terminology. But just ask that CSDE take this input into consideration and possibly work on some minor wordsmithing of that. Does anybody have any concerns with that?
Yeah, no. I do have just a comment at least I'd like to make that I think you'd be better served just by taking out the word strategic as, Alan's definition is fine, but other people read that, they're going to have other meaning that they will assign to that word. But the key here is that they develop partnerships. They are primarily collaborative if they're going to work. They're not going to be necessarily, the strategic aspect is minor compared to collaborative. I just take out strategic and say develop partnerships to do the following things, which is what it says now.
So your suggestion would be that rather than giving it a title or a name, describe what it is going to do.
Yeah, and it does that. Support clinical and school-based training, et cetera. So I think it's a good, strong sentence, but strategic just muddies, it doesn't clarify as much as it does the opposite.
I don't agree with that. I think that it's important for people who are in these leadership roles to understand how important strategy is in developing collaboration.
I agree with that also.
Yeah, I would agree.
I agree also. This is Fran, and one of the things that I certainly hope that we emphasize here, as we did in the teaching principles, is the shared responsibility and accountability both from the pre-service program and the district. I don't want to lose that.
Are we talking that in the first paragraph we're really in the formative stage and we want to emphasize the importance of the formative stage being collaborative, whereas in the second piece, as we talk about strategic, we're really talking about implementation with purpose so that there's a distinction between what's happening at each one of those
Yeah,
levels.
You might put purposeful partnerships. I don't know. But, the word is less important to me, this is Fran, than the concept, because I think for too long districts, this is just my thinking, that districts have not accepted the accountability and responsibility piece for growing whether it's teachers or administrators.
If I could just make sure that I'm hearing correctly, and I'm hearing from some people that they think that the different words of strategic and collaborative are important words to keep. From others, I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, not that they object to those words, but they want to make sure that the principle reflects and describes the intent of that. Is there anybody who disagrees with the words collaborative or strategic being in the principle, so long as we add some clarity to what is intended by that, the use of that term? Okay, so I'm going to suggest to the group that what we do then is take this input, consider the input on the use of the terms and making sure that it's clear, and see if we can't do a little wordsmithing to share back out with the group. Sarah, does that sound like a good plan to you?
Great, Bear. That works.
Great. That said, we're going to move on to Principle 5, and I'm kind of moving us along because, as you know, at the end of the survey, there were questions of any other comments or concerns. I want to make sure we have time for that discussion and to talk about the next steps and to hear from the commissioner if he's still with us. So Principle 5 is program completion and candidate assessment standards. We did receive a fair amount of feedback on this, and we want to make sure that we have a good discussion here. And I'll come back to the principles so we can look at those, but do want to look at the summary feedback that Georgette and the team at CSDE put together. And there was clear desire and very good points made about making sure that the assessment and criteria are aligned with the leader's standards. The other point made within that, and as Georgette mentioned, a lot of these comments that are you're seeing on the screen are distillations and compilations of multiple comments, but there was some real desire to make sure that those were not described, that they're described as developmentally appropriate, and what we expect of somebody completing the program and entering the profession. There was also some questions about the assessment of interpersonal skills and problem solving. Should these be program-level assessments or entry requirements? The other comments, should there be specific reference to developing the knowledge and skills relative to special and diverse populations? Does that belong in the principle? Is diversity the right wording? Is this something that we want to get into more in the next phase of our work when we get into the specific items to review? And finally, around the specificity of performance assessments that will be delineated in the development phase of this. Georgette, anything you want to add to these summary of the comments before we step back and look at the principle itself?
No, I want to hear from the group their response to these comments, so I refer back to everyone else.
Can we go back to, this is Sandy, yes. Is there any way to see Principle 5 and 1 at the same time?
I unfortunately can't split screen. If you'd like, I can take us back to 1 for just a minute to look at that and then come back to 5. And Sandy, are you thinking about this second paragraph?
Yes, uh-huh.
Everybody's had a chance to look at that, where we talk about the knowledge, skills, and dispositions that are indicative of what we expect of school leaders and continuously improving teaching and learning. And then we, as we come back to Principle 5, and just we want to look at, we're talking about program completion and the candidate assessment standards and what our belief, and again, we'll define exactly what we measure and how we're measuring as part of the next phase when we look at items for further consideration and review. And as we look at this and some of the questions raised in the survey around the assessment of interpersonal skills and some questions raised about whether there should be specific reference to developing knowledge and skills relative to special and diverse populations, students with disabilities, English language learners, and other populations. What is the group's thinking and what are people's thoughts on the principle itself and what should be in the principle relative to those things?
This is Carissa from CAS. I think that because we're at the principal level, this reads fine. I think, you know, there's good alignment here to the leadership standards and those bullet points. I think because you've clarified that you're going to be fleshing out some of the specifics at the next level, this, I think, reads very well, and I appreciate the alignment with going back to principle one, where we're consistent in our language there about demonstrating dispositions and skills. I think relative to students with special needs, the very last line where we're talking about supporting students' academic and non-academic needs, I think that, in my mind, that broadens the perspective on how we read that so that we're looking at the whole child. So I think it reads well right now.
This is Alan. I guess I don't understand why dispositions wouldn't be both rather than either or entry or program requirement, because presumably it makes sense to look for the dispositions, but they can also be strengthened. And at the end, what we want is to be able to identify whether or not the person coming out may have come in with sufficient disposition and skill, or it may be that they came in with sufficient to get into a program, but as long as when they get out, they've been trained. Those are things that can be improved through a program.
This is Sarah, I think, but maybe I'm misreading. I think that was that the intent is both upon entry and then program completion and assessment. And I even said, Georgette, just to Sandy's point of keeping that consistency, maybe we keep the knowledge, skills, and dispositions in both places. And that's an easy fix. But I do think, Alan, unless I'm misunderstanding it, it is the intent that both on entry and on program completion and assessment, that it would be knowledge, skills, and disposition.
That's the way I was reading it, too, Sarah. I was just reacting to one of the comments, which seemed to think it ought to be an either-or.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
I have a comment about the list. This is Larry. It never says student outcomes.
Larry, I was also noticing, you know, we said support students' academic and non-academic needs. It almost feels like there should have been something about growth in there. You know, that it's kind of a static, so it relates to your question.
I mean, you could have school improvement plans around a lot of things. You know, we might intend that means improving student outcomes, but doesn't always have, could be improving school climate, it could be improving the facility. I mean, I think we're talking about improving outcomes for children, and we never explicitly say that.
So this is Sarah, and I definitely agree that student outcomes have to be prominent. Georgette just whispered in my ear, at this point, much of the development here was just aligning it to the school leader standards, so we will take one more pass, mindful of that feedback, and agree on both points that, again, tying it back to our educator evaluation and support plan and the very clear focus on growth and student outcomes, that we will tighten that, enhance that in the next iteration.
Thanks.
This is Sandy again. I don't know where the appropriate place might be for this, but I would like to see some reference to either diversity or maybe even preferably equity. I just think it's a missed opportunity as we're talking about school leaders and given our particular concerns in the state to not make reference somewhere about one's ability to lead districts along the lines of diversity and or equity.
Okay, this is Sarah, and I'm sorry, Barrick, were you going to?
No, please.
Yeah, I would tend to agree that we need to seize on an opportunity to ensure that we don't miss the opportunity to leverage that. So we will look at that and and look at how we can embed that unless there's any objection to that.
No.
No, that was great.
Yeah, this is Tony, and this may be wordsmithing again, but in that last paragraph about the school leader will demonstrate the disposition skills necessary to support the development of effective, I would broaden that to encompass all, really, much of the personnel in the school district, not just teachers. So I would try to broaden that.
So like educators or just ensuring that we... Nope, you're right. We go back and forth because now with the new educator evaluation and support by statute, teachers, everyone below the rank of superintendent. Okay. So we struggle with that all the time, Tony. So sometimes we use educator and sometimes we have to decipher that teacher means everyone. But I would agree that it's for the typical reader, it probably makes sense to broaden the language who won't be picking it up in alignment with the statute. So we will absolutely look at that.
So what I'm hearing, and tell me if there's anything that we're missing, one, some wordsmithing of this final paragraph, including the addition of or clarity of the diversity and of who the personnel are that the administrator is supporting the development of. And the other big topic I heard was up in the bullets, not simply that they've done these things, but they've effectively done them to result in better outcomes for kids and better teaching practices. So I know Sarah and Georgette are going to take those notes and work on rewording the bullets as well as that lower paragraph. Is there anything that I didn't accurately reflect there before we move on to the final principle? Great. Well, we've got one more principle to go through before we open into the more general comments and feedback we got. And the final principle, principle 6, is on program effectiveness and accountability. And as with the others, we'll come back to take a look at the principle, which was crafted based on, as Georgette and Sarah both mentioned, the teacher principle that we developed. Some of the comments and feedback we got here were the use of external measures of school leader performance and holding the preparation institutions accountable for the outcomes. And this is a pretty tight alignment with what we talked about over the winter and the spring on the teacher preparation, and specific accountability measures to be developed. Again, thinking about the next phase of our work, it's one thing that we'll talk about right now in the principle itself of the accountability, what that accountability looks like and what we're measuring and how we're measuring will be part of phase two. And finally, just wanted to note the accountability data on the preparation program will be made public, the same as the teacher preparation data. Georgette or Sarah, anything to add before we go back and look at the principle itself and walk through on the wording there?
I don't think so, Barrick. I think the only thing I would add is that this is probably the appropriate place where we address the accountability and ensure that we don't lose that really important aspect of this work. And to Jess's points earlier and others, we will just look at those pieces that we discussed earlier and potentially bringing them into this principle in our next iteration.
So if we can look at this slide with the two principles side by side, and again, we had a lot of discussion around this principle as part of the teacher preparation framework. Looking at the administrator principle, are there any questions, suggestions for strengthening or improvement, or any concerns about specific wording here? I would have to say this group did some great work coming together around this the first time around for it to be looking this strong. Did I hear somebody does have some thoughts?
No, this is Tony from Brookfield. I think it looks fine. I think it's well said.
Okay. offer a last call for thoughts if anybody has any. Otherwise, as with everything, please feel free to offer by chat, which I'm keeping a log of, or send them by email. Well, thank you, everybody, for having get through this six. Now we're going to go into what was some of the additional concerns or recommendations made. And there were a lot of comments made, a lot of questions raised. I do want to just again point out that a lot of the comments that were received in the survey about additional comments or concerns had to do with specifics. How are you going to assess that candidate disposition? How is that data going to be measured for accountability? What exactly does the clinical experience look like? All of that has been recorded and logged, and we'll be sharing with the groups that will be working on the next phase of this. So just wanted to kind of give everybody a moment to look at these other concerns and recommendations. One in particular that I think makes some sense to have some conversation has to do with the second to last bullet with the sub-bullets. The suggestion that we need more to include training in additional areas, having to do with diverse student populations, communicating and building partnerships, the rigorous internship experience and the actual leadership experiences, and training on system design and change theories. And I'll ask Georgette and Sarah to comment on all of these and just remind everybody, as we think about whether we need to add any of these additional, as some people suggested, remember that we're working on the principles themselves. And as you recall from our work on teacher prep, we had the principles that may have been 50 words and probably 250 words of the items for consideration. So a lot of these, if you think there is additions that need to be included for next consideration, if you didn't include those in your comments, feel free to send those along. Georgette and Sarah, anything to add or your reaction to any of these additional recommendations?
Well, I'd like to ask the group, specific to the 4 points in the second to last bullet around additional training or specifying it rather, does this really belong here in the principles, or is that is this language we put elsewhere in the next round of additional documentation to support the principles?
And this is Sarah. I think we did, as I scan the list again, the Larry's point about student outcomes and Sandy's point about diversity and or equity, we've addressed some of those that, for me, I would agree, lift out of those as critical and important beyond those that I think we've already heard your feedback.
It feels like it belongs in the next level to me, but I guess the test would be is if you can go back and find a principle to which each of these or other bullets relate and say, you know, we know where this is going to go. And if there's no place where it seems to sit, it might tell us about something missing in a principle. But I would think that would be something you probably have already done and or could do easily.
Thanks, Mary. The other bullet I would like people to comment on, and this was caught us a little by surprise when we saw this, is the fifth bullet down about dual tracks for general administration versus special ed administration. I don't know who made that comment, but if you're on the call, could somebody elaborate what you're thinking? And I mean, this could be taken in several ways, and that's obviously, I think we think this isn't really a matter of principle that we're looking at today. This, for me, is more about a certification regulation. So any thoughts on that that anyone would like to share?
This is Kathy. I didn't write this particular one, but our special educators have had intensive discussions about the need for greater work with special educators during the 092 process, that the 092 as it now stands does not prepare the special education director sufficiently. It prepares them in leadership, but it does not prepare them well enough in the content specifics. And I've heard this same sort of frustration expressed by several educational leaders at various levels throughout the state as we've started to investigate what truly are the needs that are not identified or addressed through the 092 that belong to special educators. So I think this is an investigative question still at this point, but perhaps one we should tuck in the back of our minds to come to terms with, either by making it dual or by specifying some things a little differently for if the goal is special education versus the goal is school leadership.
Thank you, Kathy. That's helpful.
Does anybody... Go ahead, please.
No, I didn't write it either, but I think that the comment probably speaks to, and unless our region of the state is different, the overwhelming shortage of special education administration and the fact that we all live in fear that we're going to lose a pupil services director. So I think it, you know, again, I won't speak for the group, but that would be my guess. So I agree with Kathy.
Yes, this is Nancy, and I think in looking at bullet number two regarding alternate routes for the administrators, we have had discussions that there will be a need for both as we move forward in this process this coming year to look at traditional programs and alternate routes in both the teachers as well as the administrators. And so that's thoughts that we will be talking with subgroups about as we move forward in this process.
Nancy, can you, two things. I feel like the principles as currently written operate on, and this was one of my questions, operate on the assumptions that we are pulling from the teacher pool. And so can you talk about the need that you just articulated? I don't know if, you know, there's data available that supports the need for alternate routes. And if that would be shared, and then also,
Sandy, this is Georgia. Let me just follow up Nancy's comments and segue from what she said. We already have statutory authority to approve, to review and approve new alternate routes. There has been one new alternate route for administration that's been approved. I think that you aptly identify the big question that we have, and that is need. And so far, the particular alternate route hasn't really had a large cohort size, but of course it's only completed its first year. But that continues to be the biggest concern, is that the alternate routes have sufficient demand and therefore are meeting a big need for new school leaders or training new school leaders. And because they function very differently than traditional prep, it requires that there be a critical mass of candidates at a particular, well, on an annual basis to go through the alternate route. So it is more difficult for alternate routes to run with large cohort sizes if there isn't a specific targeted need that districts are trying to meet and send or recommend candidates for in a given year, because it's unlike traditional prep where people can freely go and take classes on a part-time basis over multiple years. Alternate routes don't operate in the same way. So that is a good point. We do already have authority, and we have already approved one program, so it's not that we don't have it, but it was a comment that we wanted to address, that there are already alternate routes that have come forward and one that's already been approved. I also think it's a topic that speaks to the program approval process and looking at how we integrate those types of issues into the approval of new programs, new alternate route programs, as well as traditional programs in terms of need.
And just to remind everybody, obviously we're focused on these principles, and I think there's probably other discussions that are happening in subgroups and directly or offline about program approval and where the needs are, whether they're for traditional or alternative. The principles that are being developed here will apply to all preparation programs for administrators. We've had some really good conversation on all of these principles, which I really appreciate. And just want to, before we move on to closing this with a discussion of next steps and final comments from the commissioner, if he has any, in light of the discussion we've had and the suggestions that everything here be checked against what the principles are and measured as to whether it's an item for a principle or for the deeper dive that will happen in the next phase into specifics, is there anything not included in these summary of additional concerns or recommendations or any final thoughts that all of the members would like to share with Nancy and Georgette and the commissioner and Sarah as Sarah's team goes back to work on the next iteration? Commissioner, before Sarah goes into describing what the next steps are and closing the meeting, do you have anything that you'd like to say?
Derek, this is Sarah, and the commissioner did stop by about 5 or 10 minutes ago and did have to leave. So I can certainly, we met yesterday, and I can certainly, am able to share with everybody what we've discussed in terms of next steps and moving forward.
Right.
Would you like me to move to that now?
Please do. Thanks, Sarah.
Okay. So first, again, a huge thank you to the EPAC group for taking the time to both do the pre-work that was required through the survey. Again, we were very pleased with the rate of return from the survey and the thoughtful feedback that was a precursor to today and the additional feedback that we received on the call today. So thank you for that. Our next step then will be based on the feedback and input we received today. We will go back to the drawing table in designing the next iteration of the school leader principles. We will then, as previous processes have occurred, we will get it back out to the group for another round of review, feedback, and input. With respect to the time frame for that, we are anticipating, and it typically depends on the agenda, bringing it to the board in September. More likely, we're thinking October. So we will be working on, again, the next iteration and preparation to get consensus on the principles so that we can bring it to our State Board of Education, again, September, more likely October. The next step would be the development of our work plan for 2013-14. At this point, we were pretty much ready to go to the work plan phase. However, we've had a development that we think is a good development to share, and that is, if you recall, during our council meetings, we had been exposed to and shared the CCSSO document, Our Responsibility, Our Promise, which is an outline of the recommendations from the Chief State School Officers with respect to teacher and leader preparation. Early in the spring, the CCSSO put out to the states an opportunity for about 8 to 10 states to apply to pilot those CCSSO recommendations. We have recently heard, I think I got overly excited thinking we had been selected as a final for a state to pilot, when in fact we have been selected for some additional meetings with CCSSO and other states to I would characterize it as them doing their due diligence to do a readiness assessment to ensure that we truly do have the state readiness to be able to take this on. The good news is it would come with some financial assistance for us over the next 2 years, so we think it will leverage our work in a very positive way. So because of that very recent development, we don't think it makes sense to put pen to paper in developing a work plan that may be further informed by that CCSSO work if, in fact, at the end of August, in our continued work with them, we determine, or they determine, that we, in fact, will be one of those 8 to 10 finally selected states. So we will keep you posted on those developments as they continue to unfold, but I'm going to say I'm more than cautiously optimistic. I'm pretty optimistic, but it is not final yet. So we will. Yes.
I may have misunderstood this, but did you say this was money to implement CCSO's regulations?
Yes, Alan, so if you recall, we did bring to the board the fact that we were applying. We did submit an application to be one of those 8 to 10 pilot states who would pilot CCSSO recommendations. So with respect to that question, one of the things that we hope will happen at the meeting when we get together with CCSO, we know that they will be ensuring our readiness to do that. We also want to be certain, and we have definitely done a very thorough review, but we need to make sure that the recommendations set forth in CCSSO with all of you that are our council, that we are good with with moving forward as they are.
That was my question. How closely are they tracking with what we have now done?
So in our development of the application, we feel confident that they are close. We did share them with a couple of groups, and again, we shared them at the full EPAC Council. So there's nothing in there that gives us cause for concern that it's a completely misaligned direction from where we're going. If anybody did not receive, we had copies at several of the meetings, but if you're interested and just want to make sure that you have an opportunity to review them and let us know if you did have any concern, you can access them on the CCSSO website, or if easier, shoot me a quick email and I'd be happy to access them and send them to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So with respect to, so that addresses the work plan and how we feel the time frame will roll out again as we have greater clarity with respect to that process and again whether we're selected as a pilot and so on. With respect to what we envision moving forward, we envision less full EPAC Council meetings and more work group meetings because we are ready to go into the weeds and get to that granular level. And so, one, we need the capacity of various work groups, and two, we just don't think we'll be as efficient in the full council meeting. So, again, with respect to timing, we think it makes sense to wait and see how the how things align with the CCSSO pilot. Then we develop our work plan, and then we will most likely convene a meeting and then get to work through work groups versus full EPAC meetings this year. So that is what I know as of today. And again, because of those recent developments, some of that was a shift. What questions do you have about process, about moving forward, about time frame, or most importantly today, next steps for the draft of the next iteration of our Principles for Leader Preparation? So, Barak, hearing none, I think, are we in a good place?
We are, and I just want to thank everybody for their time, both in the survey, prior to that, and during today's conversation. As we mentioned at the start, we'll be posting the audio of this if you'd like to revisit it, or if you have colleagues who weren't able to join us, and then CSDE will be taking all of the thoughts and comments offered here in the survey and in any emails received in the next day or two, and working on the next iteration of these. So just want to really thank everybody for their time and thoughts on this and working through. And I think it's a testament to this group how thorough this conversation has been and the strength in moving from the teacher prep to the admin prep.
But I wanted to say, Elsa, that these meetings are not easy to organize by phone, on the web, the webinar. Everything worked very well. So I commend the people who put it together. It was very well thought out.
Thanks, Elsa. It's a team effort, and so we appreciate that. And I would just want to say thank you to Barak, because he was hugely helpful to us, even from afar, in being able to get to today, including the webinar. So to Nancy and Georgette as well. So thank you to all of you for your critical, thoughtful, and helpful feedback to get us to the next level. Barak, thank you. And hope everyone has a wonderful continued summer until we come together as a full EPAC in the fall.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thank you.